4 CPA Mobile.
N4IQ Mobile.
N4IQ, KB4 CBA.
What? What are you up and about doing today? Kind of wet out here. I'm headed to the UPS store, and then headed to the local dump.
Well, I am headed to Ace Hardware. We're, of course, we're having our main bathroom remodeled, totally gutted and remodeled, and they're almost through. The painter's here. The only thing we're waiting on are the shower doors, which probably won't be here till March 9th. But everything else is installed, ready to go. And I'm putting in, then we're putting in new cabinet doors and drawers. And I'm doing that. We're painting the cabinets. I'm putting a new microwave over the stove. And so I just put in a toggle bolt that's supplied with the, with the unit. And my little snap-on screwdriver pulled the toggle bolt right through the sheet metal of the backing plate and right through the wall it went. So it's laying down inside there somewhere, so I gotta go get two toggle bolts and some washers so it doesn't happen again.
What are you talking about?
Bolt. I don't know if you know what that is or not. Anyway, they drilled the dang holes too big. Bunch of idiots. I tell you, people that do this stuff ought to have better sense than the, drill a hole in the piece of metal that thin. You know, knowing that you're mounting a heavy object on it and you want a firm foundation for it, and I don't have any I've got one stud to nail into. It's right in the middle, so it's not going to be doing me a lot of good. So I've got one screw in it, but big deal, I need some on the side. So that's where the toggle bolts come in.
Okay, I still don't know what you're talking about. You said it about 20 times. So what are you installing?
Replacing a microwave. It was up over the stove. And so the space is already there. And but this one, instead of just bolting to the underside of the cabinet, it... at the back, it has a metal backing plate that it hooks to, and you have to mount that to the back wall.
Well, I'm totally familiar with it because I replaced ours about 3 months ago. Took the old one out and got the biggest one that you could mount, you know, like under a cabinet. The width was exactly the same as the old one, but that's where the similarity stopped. This one's much deeper, and it did have bolts on the top. Of course, the holes already drilled for the old one didn't match the new one. I had to redrill all those, and there was reinforcement put in that cabinet up in the top, so instead of drilling through less than an inch of plywood, I had to go through like a 2x4 counter-seat the holes because the bolts weren't long enough. Exactly what you're talking about. And we had the metal plate on the back. But on mine, the weight is actually carried by the bolts that were on the top of it, just like the old one. But there was a mounting plate on the back that you had to install. And yeah, there were, I used toggle bolts for that. But it only served as a hinge for the bottom on mine. So I know exactly what you're talking about. It took me a whole day. I tell you what, I had to go wash my mouth out with soap afterwards.
Should have better sense than put a bolt, a little skinny bolt through with a, and I mean, it had a decent sized head on it, but it wasn't that much, the head wasn't that much bigger diameter than the hole that it went through, and so it just, and it's so thin piece of metal, it's not, you know, it's not, it doesn't have any support or thickening there. It should be thicker there. But anyway, so that's a washer will take care of that, keep it from pulling it through, but it just pulled it right through the sheet metal. And I was just using a battery-operated screwdriver. I mean, dang. And it wasn't even working hard. So, I don't know. It just takes me off that I've got to run. Yeah, they supplied the parts, the toggle bolts and everything, and now I got to run out Ace Hardware and spend money on it. They're getting a letter from me, that's for sure. Well, I'm here at Ace Hardware, and I will talk to you later. I'm so flustered. I can't even think of your call. N4IQ, KB4CBA.
Do you serve any crackers with that wine, Dave?
I was gonna tell him he's about ready to call me Tom. Yeah, I was lucky I had studs in the back where that metal plate went. I was able to find those. I actually used regular screws into the studs, but there's one place where I put a toggle bolt, really didn't need to. And I bought mine online, and I bought it from Lowe's, went and picked it up myself, and hauled it back home, and then I started cursing. Oh, hey, how you doing, Tom?
A lot better after I got that one in. I wouldn't aggravate Dave when he's at his lowest point. Go ahead, Dave, if you're still there, pick it back up, Bill, N0TR.
Well, hey, Tom, I appreciate that. I know you like to kick a guy when he's down. But, yeah, my wife ordered this online. They delivered it. What was I going to tell you? Oh, heck, I done forgot now, but anyway, you know, I know what to do to fix it, so, and, oh, we got new kitchen countertops, too, the granite or whatever it is, you know, my wife just had to have them, the same color as the other ones, just new ones, and, of course, they don't have the overhang that the old ones had, so I had to raise the dishwasher up. I mean, it just creates all kinds of problems. It's just a pain. I'm done, and I'm tired of having to use that little dinky bathroom. But anyway, all right, I'm out of here. KB4CVA.
Thank you, Dave. Sounds like you need to follow Tom's advice. Of course, it wasn't exactly advice, but do what he was talking about. You need to go home and have a glass of wine, or better, and just have an attitude adjustment, and everything gets into perspective. go ahead, Tom.
Laughing here. KI7R, hang on just a second. Bill, where my memory will go. And there's a... I just copied a soda KI7R on 18082. Here. Got a good signal. Uh-oh, somebody's tuning up on him. I'll turn that off. Standard operating procedure. Oh, well, I hope you're having a good gloomy old day there, Phil. Or Bill. Phil. I got Phil on the mind here. I was filling out a QSL card. You wouldn't believe it, but I talked to a guy on here the other day, and I really enjoyed it. OE2WUM, and he was in Bavaria near Salzburg in Austria. And he was on Echolink and talked to him quite a while. And I think I got Dave in on the conversation. He actually sent me a QSL card through the postal service, Bill.
He must be of the old school. I get some. Up on my QRZ page, I say, be glad to QSL. But I will not return a QSL unless it's SASE. occasionally I still get some from people. I absolutely do not need their card. And I do return the card. Then I put some words of wisdom in there with it. Like, Merry Christmas. I requested it. SAE, but I'm still sending this to you. Suggest that you don't do it again. Have some words of wisdom like that. Well, that's good. Austria, yeah, that's great. Well, tonight is CQ Worldwide 160 sideband. I'm going to get on that one. I'm all set up, ready to go. And then tomorrow is the NAQP Ready. It starts in the afternoon. It starts around 1 o'clock, I think. No, 2 o'clock. I can't remember. But it's 10 hours. You get to operate 8. So looking forward to that. That'll be fun. Be something fun to do when it's raining.
This is 0TR with N4IQ. Yeah, Bill, that sounds good. I turned that back up over there and destroys my... I have a hard time multitasking here. I'm watching the band school, which a good friend of mine helped set up for me. I don't know if you know him or not. But I sure enjoy that, Bill. It is wonderful. And I wasn't going to have it on today, and I was looking this guy's call up, so I looked over at the database on the call signs, and there was 9 Golf 5 Fox India from Ghana there on 17. And lately there hadn't been anything, really, so I ran down here without the computer. And, of course, he was running split. And many times you can't hear the split side. Sometimes you can, overwhelmingly. But today was one of those days that anything that was going to him was hard to find by searching the old-fashioned way. So I ran upstairs, got the computer, and looked, and sure as heck, he was up 1, and that's where I had it set, and worked him on the first or second call. I fumbled the last time. I said N0TA, and I went back to him and twice with N0TR, and he come back, and he was a good strong 5-9, and come to find out, I don't have Ghana on 17, but he was at 18083. There's another guy on there about... Well, that soda was on at 18082, and so I went over there just to see who it was, but he's not transmitting now. There's a few on there, other than digital. There's one on at 18090. Anyways, I don't think I'm going to send for the card because he's at Delta Lima, who's in Ghana, and you got to go through his QSL manager. But I will send that old boy from OE2WUM that was on here on Echolink just to be kind, but I'm exactly like you. From the time I first started out, I always sent an SASE when I asked for somebody else to respond, and had it all addressed, postage on it, return address, the whole nine yards. And that's the only efficient way to do it.
I certainly agree. That's what I do. And I guess some people don't know better, or they're just cheap, or both. Anyway, that's great on, I got a phone call. I got to go. I'm at a UPS store. I'll call you a little bit later. N4IQ.
N0TR, clear.
Dark KO4LEO.
Hi, Mr. Jim. How you doing today, sir? It's N0TR.
Oh, just watching the rain come down like most folks here. Hey, Tom, I got a question for you. Who, do you print your own QSL cards, or do you have somebody you use to do that?
No, I print them on cardstock, and they come out real nice. I'm not smart enough to do that on the computer, but my daughter sure was. I used to have N0TR from the Land of Oz and the tornado on there, but now it's just N0TR. It shows a map of the United States, and South Carolina is in black outline, and Greer is highlighted on there. And they come out real good on just a regular old printer.
I think some printed out there. I just picked up an ICOM 7300, and I'm trying to get all the antenna issues worked out with that. Was looking at QSL cards. I got one from a fella I bought it from up in the Northeast, and it looked pretty good.
Well, that's sure a good way of doing it. I don't see anything wrong with that, Jim. You know, they sell you a printer like this Canon, and then pretty soon they don't support it anymore. And it uses a ton of ink. Now, I buy aftermarket stuff from Amazon, and it works fine. It's got the memory chip in it and all, so it works. Never had any problems. I know Rusty does that. He buys them from some outfit over in Spartanburg. And he watches his pennies and nickels real close, and so he'd be a good one to tell you on that. But they ripped you off on the ink if you buy OEM stuff, and it's good. But, by the time you do all that, you can usually have somebody design a card just exactly how you want. I've got books full of them, and some of them are really beautiful cards.
Just a card for a QSL card these days?
The postage just for a card. I always put them in an envelope so they don't mess them up. You know, our snail mail, how they do. I was surprised to get this one. This one had a new Schwanstein castle on it, which I'm sure you're probably familiar with. It looks like Fantasyland in Disney World. And my wife and I and the kids all went over there together one time years ago. And it's quite beautiful. And why he would send a card when we talked on Echolink, I don't know, but I'm going to be courteous enough to send him one back. And I think it's $1.20 or so. I thought it was more than that. And I asked Siri this morning, and she said international was $1.20. You can buy a forever stamp. And I'm out of international stamps now because I haven't been sending any cards for a long time. Don't need them, don't want them, really. But, that's probably as easy a way as any, Jim. And by the way, that 7300, from all reports I've ever heard, it's an excellent radio and a good value.
I'm anxious to get it up and running here. I just got to get the antenna issues resolved with working around an HOA. But I think I have a solution there. So as soon as I can get it up and running, I may give you a call back.
Well, in those situations, just use a vertical. Nobody knows what they are. Tell them it's a TV antenna. Yeah, I want you to come out here sometime and have a cup of coffee and walk around. And if you haven't been around a lot of people or anything in that, you're welcome anytime. I get my second shot, but the wife and I, March 2nd. So after that, we'll be pretty safe. And we can stay socially distanced, I assure you. But yeah, glad to have you over anytime, Jim.
Hey, Tom, I got to run. I got a guy working on something here on the house. He needs some help. So I'll catch up with you later, and we'll talk about that stuff. I'll send you a QSL card or something that's got my personal contact information on it, and we'll talk that way. KO4LAO clear.
Okie doke, Jim. I'm good on QRZ if you use QRZ. This is N0TR73.
KO4LAO, thanks.
JW Mobile.
Talk, wants to talk to you. All you know is airplanes lately.
Airplanes lately, Tom. Just because I haven't done it in 5 years, and the 5 years that I did do it ago, I only did it for about a year after going like 10 years without doing it. So I'm stuttering, but I'm getting back.
There's money used in aeronautical engineering. And that gentleman I just talked to flew the, I think they call him a KC-10, and he flew the KC-135 tankers. Is a real fine gentleman to talk to, and very, very interesting, Dave. KO4LAO, I think is the call.
Yeah, I've talked to Jim a few times. He is interesting to talk to. He's got the scoop on the being legal, you know, making it legal, and probably a lot more than that. That's probably just the tip of the iceberg, what I'm guessing from talking to him.
Yeah, he's no dummy, that's for sure. I always enjoy it. We reminisce about Wichita. I went out there when I was a little kid, and I had the time. I got the time. I'm retired. I got some 126 slides. Remember the old 126 cameras? And I took some slides when I was just 9, 10, 11 years old. I don't know. I'm visiting my aunt and uncle out there, and he had the B-52s, and the nose was fluorescent orange, and back on the, I think the vertical stabilizer was orange, fluorescent orange. Now, I don't, those might have been the test beds for Boeing out there, because that's where they were building them, but everybody says they'd never seen that. I got a picture of it.
When you were growing up, that's what you were seeing where you were living when you were young?
This is N0TR. Well, I went for a week in the summer at times to spend with my Aunt Selma and Uncle Les out in Wichita, and it was right in the flight path for Cessna, Beechcraft, and Boeing. And I loved airplanes anyway, and I'd ride my bicycle out and around and take pictures of them as they flew over. The B-47s and the B-52s were constantly in the air back then in the, I think it was the late 50s, Dave.
When my sister and I were growing up, my dad went to Clemson on and off. His dad died when he was in the middle of going to Clemson, so he had to leave, and then we had came back later. And we'd ride our bicycles out there to where the coach had the football players playing football. And we'd sit and watch them while they practiced. It wasn't airplanes, but it's kind of the same, kind of reminds me of the same thing. Yeah, if I could make as much being an aeronautical engineer as I could, you know, doing programming for financial systems, there would have been no contest. But I never really understood that. Why manufacturing and, you know, why that's not, I mean, that's essential. Why is that not like at the top of the list instead of banking? What is banking? Everybody's got a bank account. Why is that so important? I just don't get the way things work.
You know, the bad thing about back then, working at Boeing or one of the aircraft industries, it had so many peaks and nulls. You'd be working fine one day, working all the overtime in the world, and the next day you were laid off. And it's a shame that it's not more stable. Now they're picking on Boeing for this engine failure on that 777, and it states clearly that Boeing's responsible for the maintenance on the aircraft and that, and that Pratt Whitney's the one responsible for the engines. And that was a bad situation, I grant you. And they had another failure of that same engine on a 747 about 5 days ago. So it was turbine blades, and that's one of those things that can happen when you're flying. And I think that 777 can fly like 5 or 5.5 hours on that, what they call it, EOTA or something like that. Anyways, you lose an engine, and you got to be within 5.5 hours of a, you know, abort. So as long as it didn't shake the wing in half or something, they weren't in a great deal of danger. But that one looked really bad. It looked like it did a little superstructure damage to the wing.
KB4CPA.
Jump right in there.
Much of the military channel. I wish I could remember the plane, the jet, but he got his left wing knocked off. I think all but about 2 feet of it was sticking out. That's all he had left. He flew that thing and landed it. Now, he had to fly at a high rate of speed, and he had to land it really hot, but he landed that thing, and they stood there on the ground and looked at it and just shook their heads. I wish I could remember the jet, what kind it was, but it was just unbelievable.
Run into Starbucks here. Amy wanted a Starbucks, and I'm off work, so I'm going to get her one. But I'll be back in just a little bit. W4DJW.
Hear you. This is your LTR. Yeah, I've seen that, and I can't remember it either. I don't know if it was older or not. I was thinking 810, but some of those in World War II were shot all to heck, and they still made it back. I mean, good portions of their vertical stabilizer's gone, and good portions of the horizontal stabilizer's gone. It's pretty amazing at times. Well, back in the 1980s, they established this deal where you didn't have to have four engines anymore, and mathematically, you're less apt to have a big problem with two engines than you are with four. So they started letting them fly overseas, but they had to be within a pretty limited range. Like if you're going to Europe, you had to have the aborts within, say, 60 minutes or so, like Gander or Reykjavik, Iceland, or up in Greenland. And there's several different aborts they can go to, still can. But that's increased dramatically over the years with the reliability of the engines. And they actually let some single-aisle planes fly overseas now. They like the 737. And but still, they have to remain within a limited range. But like those 787s and the 777s and that, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 hours to the nearest abort if you lose an engine. And I've been in, you know, when we used to, I know Captain Beck feathered one day in that S2, and it was just Pratt Whitney 1825s, and man, it raised Cain, and you had to put the rudder assist on to keep it from yawing so bad. And he looked back at me and he said, "Look, Ralph, no hands." And he had his hands off of the yoke. And we had one engine feathered. Boy, it was really a roaring, though.
No hands. Nobody flying the plane. Yeah, I can't remember. I don't think it was an A-10 because they're slow. And this plane was this jet was basically making itself a rocket and with speed. And that's how it stayed in the air. And then how he landed, I don't remember, but I imagine he had to come in really hot. It had double long runway and a lot of runway and, you know, stand a chance of blowing out some tires going that fast. And anyway, but he made it. And I tell you, when you can lose a wing and save your plane, that's a feat. And yeah, I know the A-10 is a good jet. It they used to have them down in Myrtle Beach there at the airbase when it was airbase down there, and we used to go to Spring Maid, take the senior adults down there, and I'd watch the A-10s take off and other jets. But anyway, they say they're just indestructible. You can shoot them full holes, and they'll still get you home. And so anyway, and this is KB4CPA.
You are getting ready to sneeze here if I'm not careful. Yeah, I'm not sure what plane that was, but I remember seeing something like that, Dave. I watched the flight demonstration. My nephew that flies the 787s, he was flying C-130s out of St. Joseph, Missouri, and he took us to Richards Gabar, Bernice and I, Air Force Base near Kansas City. And we watched him do a flight demonstration there and also got to see that the vertical liftoff one made in Britain. And it did a demonstration which was just astounding of raw power. And anyways, those A-10s were something else. When they first come out, they had very, very basic avionics, not hardly anything. And I know during the Gulf War, they were using the missiles on the side of the plane to look through their infrared seekers. They rigged them up somehow so they could actually do night bombing and that. And they have a titanium bathtub that the pilot sits in. So, yeah, it'll take a lot of grief, that's for sure. And the GE engines are way up high on the back, which kind of protects them from ground fire somewhat. But they did some amazing demonstrations. And the Harrier was the other one that they did a demonstration with.
Poor Elio, acknowledged. I'm going to jump out of here. This is going to be my last one. Isn't it the C-130s that have... they put some jets on them to help them get off the ground if they were really loaded down or they needed to take off in a hurry?
Yeah, that was Jito. And Jim just broke in there. He is a pilot. Go ahead, Jim.
15C, and I believe it was an Israeli F-15C that that did that. So when he came back to land, yeah, he came in hot, and he took the barrier. But I think they were doing air-to-air training at the time when it happened. I'm not sure it was actual combat when it happened. But, yeah, that's a pretty interesting event. It's a pretty tough airplane. But the other, when I was out at Castle Air Force Base, I met the guy who flew the fly-off airplane against the A-10. It was the A-9. And he said it was really a better airplane, but politics got involved in it. And the A-10 is still a great, great jet. I wanted one when I was in pilot training, but it just wasn't good enough to get one.
Well, I hear the pilots love them, and so does people on the ground, because they provide air cover for them, and they can get in places and, you know, take out whatever they need to take out and get out. Well, I'm going to jump out of here. Y'all carry on. I wish I could talk some more about it, but I've got miles to go here. Okay, go ahead and pick it up, Tom. KB4CBA, clear.
Okay, Dave. Good to hear you. And, Jim, I'll never forget going to Richard's Gabar one time with my dad, and my uncle picked me up and set me in the cockpit of an A1 Sky Raider. I don't know if that's before your time or not, but I just kind of disappeared when I sat down in that. And, unfortunately, his name was Dwight Douglas, and he was the Marine Corps captain, and he did a tour crawl at Cherry Point, North Carolina, and went end over end and lost his life there.
I had a wing commander when I was a young officer in SAC. Old Colonel Basil D. Gregorius, he was quite the guy. He was a Greek, big fella, and he flew the A1Es in Southeast Asia and had quite a lot. It was quite the airplane. Could put a lot of armament on that thing to do ground support.
He actually shot down a couple of fighter jets over there with that prop-driven aircraft.
That thing had a lot of ordnance on it. It was almost like the P-47 Thunderbolt, you know. It was a tough airplane during World War II, and you could do the same thing. It was like a flying tank almost.
I heard somebody once say that, and I'm not that knowledgeable, that it could carry its weight in bombs. But I thought it had about somewhere near 10,000 pound gross weight, or the bomb weight on it. But, yeah, it was bad. It's confirmed that they did shoot down several jets over there. They could get low and slow and near the ground, and the jets would overshoot them, and then they'd pop them. But I imagine there was far more on the other side that shot them down because of their inadequacy. But the guys over there must have loved them for ground support. That engine, I think, was a 3350. I'm not sure. But if you gunned it too hard, the aircraft would do a torque roll around the engine.
Like the GB Air Racer, if you've ever seen that one.
Yeah, and the fella flew the X-1, the General. I'm losing it. I'm getting old. You know, Redenbacher, who was that flew that X-1? Glamorous Glennis?
Here, give me a minute.
Jack Burnett, one of the most famous generals. Where I seen that plane in the Aerospace Museum in Washington, D.C. He named it after his wife.
Chuck Yeager.
There you go. I'm going to put a star on the wall for you here. Yeah, he just passed away. He was truly a great man. Who was the one that led the first bombing off the Hornet with the B-25s over there? Was that him?
No.
Again, when I hear him, I remember him at times. But that was quite a feat. We could do a deck run in the S-2s. I always got a cat shot, and I wasn't on the carrier very long. So, can't comment a lot on that until I got transferred off to the P-3s, but it was possible to do a deck run with those.
It's a whole different ball of wax and different rules, different philosophy. You know, in the Navy, you could do something if it wasn't prohibited, but in the Air Force, exactly the opposite were there. If it wasn't in the tech order, you couldn't do it.
A picture of a test pilot doing a roll. He rolled a B-52 right there over the airbase one time. You ever see that picture?
52-year-old, I have seen the picture of the, Tex Johnson was the test pilot for Boeing who rolled the later version of the KC-135. A lot of guys in the tanker business have a picture of that airplane with its engine pods pointed up in the air and the city below them.
That one. It could have been that one. Because as I remember, it looked like a 707, so it might not have been a 52. But, that's amazing. Well, I had visited the Hornet down at Charleston, and there's an S2 sitting on the fantail back there. And anyways, I bought a hat because the Hornet's exact sister ship to the Bennington that I was on, CV-S20. And it was a submarine carrier back then when they always had an escort carrier with the CVAs. It was a CVA during World War II. But he said, "You fly off of that thing?" I said, "Yeah." And he said, "I landed on that sucker one time." He says, "It like to broke my back when they put me on the cats." And I said, "Yes, I've heard that before. That's why they took the jets off of there, because they broke." He was an A-4 pilot, and he'd landed aboard the Bennington, and we had hydraulic catapults instead of steam, and they didn't have the linear acceleration. They just whapped, and you was gone.
Dialed it down for the type of aircraft, but especially for an A-4, that was that wasn't that big of a jet.
Wonka toys. That OS too, it was a tank, kind of like the A-10s. They made, I think, quite a few of them still flying that, or a few of them, I should say, as firefighting, because we had a bomb bay, and they made that into an aerial tanker.
KC-10 out there, when I flew KC-10s, the variant we had modified was the DC-10-30, and they've got the same model out there with huge pumps on board that can do a lot of fire retardant, but they use it for firefighting.
Yeah, that's huge, and man, the payload is huge compared to anything. I was right under that helicopter that has that capability, that big orange sucker, I guess it's Sikorsky, up in Oshkosh, and I don't know if it was that one that can go down and hover and reload the water off of the lake. I've seen some of them, they go down, they skim across the water. I guess that's them flying boats that do that. But that helicopter that does it, that big orange one that's so popular, boy, that thing's huge.
We have some now that are actually robotics. Their pilots are not in them, and I guess that's for high risk missions or something. I just happened to be doing some research on drone stuff here this past summer and saw where they were using air drones as helicopters. It's pretty interesting.
I read where they're, I don't know if it's actually, I know they were testing it, but they're going to make drones that will extend the range of our fighters that are tankers now. So in other words, they'll be positioned appropriately, like off the Chinese coast, and then they'll refuel our F-18s and whatever else they send in the package. And they're unmanned, and I've seen the unmanned ones that they're testing on the carriers. That's pretty amazing.
But, you know, in high-threat situations, I think that's a much better deal, especially because they can pull Gs that pilots can't pull, especially with the UCAS, the combat versions of that. They can really make a difference. You know, most guys can't take more than 9 Gs for a short period of time, and then they're gone. They're blacked out. But those where they don't have to put the life support systems and stuff in the drones, they can do a lot of maneuvering there and pull a lot of tight Gs.
Carry more payload because of that. And it's just amazing that the structure will even take more than that, because I'd hate to think about pulling 9 Gs. Good Lord Almighty.
when I was in T-38s in pilot training, it was 3 to 4. You know, you didn't want to pull much more than that. But you wear the go-fast pants, you know, and I was flying one time in the My G-suit kept inflating on me, and I couldn't figure out what it was. And there's a test button in the T-38 on the left side, and I had a pubs bag. I had inadvertently, you know, we had a little kit that we carried all our flight publications in, and that pubs bag was sitting on that test switch, and every time I made a turn, it would pull G's on the bag, and the bag would inflate my G-suit.
Sorry. Yeah, that's what Steve Webb was his name, and that flies the 787s. Now he learned in the T-38s. They wanted him to go into fighters, but he wanted to be an airline pilot, so he chose the C-130 for that reason. He told me one time they got to break the sound barrier one time, he said, and then they were doing rolls one day, and I don't know, you'd have to ask him, but they wanted to see how many rolls you could do and sustain down there, and he said he made 7 rolls with it, but he made, he was the top gun in his class.
But back when I was going in the early 80s, everybody went through the same program. You know, you did the T-37, T-38, and then you either fighter qualified or you went into a heavy program, or you asked for it, requested it. A lot of guys wanted heavies because they wanted to go into the airlines right after. But now they don't do that. They have essentially a trigger puller track where it's a bombers, fighters, and then the guys doing tanker transport go on another track. But they just had another accident in T-38s here last Friday, and and we had back in, I forget what part of last year, we lost a team doing formation landing at Vance. That's where I went to pilot training, and we lost 2 people there. And so it's they're starting to take a relook at what kind of training they're doing with the students because they're losing too many people to accidents during training.
That's one of the prettiest jets I've ever seen. There was 4 of them down here at Greenville, parked at the Executive Airport last year, and Maurice and I drove down there. I didn't even know they were there, and they messed up our parking place back there. You go past the terminal and on back to the Exec Airport, but where we used to park now is the new fire department there.
Mike, you were talking about, I believe it was your son there, you were saying he got to go supersonic once. That's called your torch ride. You have to go way away from the base and go high altitude, and you push over and accelerate and light the burners. But you got to be high enough to see the sonic boom doesn't affect folks on the ground, because a lot of chicken and turkey farmers file claims against the government when their chickens and turkeys got killed from the shock of a boom.
I didn't know that. I just remember saying that they got to do it one time. That was pretty much, you know, dive, I suppose. Yeah, it's on Bernice's side, my wife's side. Steve, he's our nephew, and all 3 nephews out there in Wichita. Their mom worked for Beechcraft, and he actually learned to fly it in the Beech Aircraft Club there. And he flew home one time in an A-35 or something. It was an all-digital dash Beech. And I went up with him in a 150. I'm not too fond of those out there in those winds around Wichita. And I was older at the time. We kind of felt like the wind had you instead of you having the wind. We flew over where they had all those Braniff Airlines brightly colored planes parked out there at Boeing, I guess when they went bankrupt. But Dad and I mustered up the money to pick up my brother in St. Louis and give Steve some flight time. So he flew that nice Beach Bonanza home to our house, which was 165 miles east of Wichita in Pittsburgh. And then we flew over and picked up my brother and his new bride at St. Louis and come back. And, wow, that was a hot rod. That thing, I can't remember where we cruised at, but I'm thinking it was close to 160.
It was quite the jet, especially to fly during formation. My favorite thing to do was to fly close trail, you know, where you're tucked up under the behind the guy in front of you, on top of you, and doing loops and rolls and stuff. It's just quite a jet. It was a Northrop-built aircraft, and it's still today one of the best fighter trainers around.
Flying formation is a thrill of a lifetime. I don't know if they'd let us have a camera. I always assumed they wouldn't. But in the S2, each of us sensor operators had a porthole there. And I looked out my porthole one day, and there was three or four other S2s in formation there. That's pretty thrilling.
Like having to make a wing landing in formation when you're looking sideways as the number two guy on the lead, and you'd want, everything in your body tells you to turn around and look forward, but you can't, and you've got to hope that the lead doesn't crash into the runway, because your job is to be two and be right there, right next to him.
That would be spooky. Takes a special kind of person. I'll give it to you, Jim. That's for sure. Well, I'll let you go. I've been sitting here long enough, and I'm going to make out this card to that. There's a gentleman from Austria here, and on Echolink, and that's rare. People don't send QSL cards on Echolink, but he was from near New Solenstein, so the wife and I and the kids visited there when Shelley was going to school in Austria, in Vienna. And they took us up there to see that castle. And so I'm going to send him a card back. It's only a couple of bucks, so no big deal. Bernie said, it won't hurt you, send him a card back. And I'm not tight by any means. So I'm going to make that card out and send that. And then I'm going to put in a whole house surge protector. I got one upstairs, but I'm going to put one in this sub panel that I put downstairs just for drill. It's just a big MOV, and they're only about $50, and they'll take 22,500 amp surge. So I think it's money well invested, Jim.
Doing the same thing here. I'm having to think a lot about that with the antenna configuration I'm looking at. I was going to tell you before you leave, one of the finest A-10 pilots that the Air Force ever created was a guy named Lieutenant Colonel Muck Brown, Robert Brown, and he passed away from cancer not long ago, but I got a chance to meet him as a good friend of mine, but he's buried up in Waynesville, and someday I'll tell you some stories about him.
Hear that. Well, these breakers, now, for example, I put in a home line down here. The breaker panel upstairs on the main is General Electric. So you need to be specific about which one you buy. If it looks like a double pole breaker, and you just snap it in there, and there's one white wire comes out the bottom of it, and that goes over to the neutral bar. So it's absolutely nothing to it. And they call them a whole house surge protector. Square D makes them for their panels. I bought the one for the GE. I bought it from Home Depot many years ago. It's got a green light on it, an LED. And if it gets destroyed or something, that light will go out. But I highly recommend it. And beans, I got antennas out there up in the air. I think a person's more susceptible to that. So I'm going to put one on this panel down here. It just about the time it takes you to pull that face off the panel, you can stick it in there, and you can shut the main off and stick it in and hook that wire to the neutral and be totally safe. And it's well worth the money. And they look like a double-pole circuit breaker, Jim.
But I got to admit, right now, I'm like a dog watching TV. You know, it looks really interesting, but I don't know what it means.
metal oxide wear resistors, a surge protector, and they put those in those strips like for your computer, you know, that you buy to protect your computer. Only this one suppresses dangerous power surges for electrical wiring and appliances in your house. And it easily plugs into your load center like a two-pole breaker. It says it's a critical addition to your plug strips for layered suppression, first line of suppression for your wiring and appliances. And inductive devices in my years of experience are pretty susceptible to surges, like, for example, the control transformer in your HVAC unit, and I've seen a lot of them die to lightning and things like that. But anything else you have plugged in your house, it should give you adequate protection for the whole house, anything that's plugged into an outlet, Jim.